Hi, I'm Lisa Dascoli.
Annie Weiss.
Richard Skipper.
And this is Talk of the Town. And tonight we're going to be talking about ethics in the media. Where does the First Amendment fit in? And what's the responsibility of the artist to be ethical? And welcome to Talk of the Town. I am Lisa Dascoli, and with me again this month are my wonderful co-hosts, Annie Weiss.
Hi, Lisa.
And Richard Skipper.
Hello there.
And we're doing a very different show for us this month. As anybody who listens knows, I always tag the show as the latest in music, arts, and entertainment. But there's a topic that we're all very passionate about in the entertainment industry, and each of us has our own background in entertainment. Annie's a comedian. Mm-hmm. I'm a theater person. Richard is cabaret and music and really all forms. You're the most.
You name it, I do it.
You're the most rounded of us.
You're a jack of all trades.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
But master of none.
Yeah.
But we are going to talk this evening about ethics in the media. And ethical behavior, and just basically what it is, when is it too much? What's the line? When do we draw the line and say that's really too much and, you know, uncalled for? Mm-hmm. We all have come from backgrounds where an artist will say, well, I stand on my First Amendment rights mm-hmm. to say such a thing. And when is it too far? When is pushing the envelope too far?
There's a fine line between speaking the truth, having the right to, you know, of freedom of speech and crossing line for sure. And I know as a comedian, I would never want that right to be taken away, because I do, not that I'm a political comic per se, but I do like to have that freedom that I can say whatever I want, which is beautiful and why my ancestors came to this country. Because we're all, you know, we all come from immigrants, right?
Absolutely.
So, and that's what they sought out.
But Annie, let me ask you this. And I mean, I know you, so I'm asking a question I know the answer to already. Do you find it necessary to use four-letter words and swear language during your act?
Okay. I believe that there's a time and a place for it.
Okay.
Okay. I believe that the F word is such a beautiful word that gets the point across so wonderfully in any kind of context. Do I necessarily use it in my set, in my act? No, I don't, because I am a clean comic. That's my choice as an artist. But I believe if you use it in a certain way that it's funny. My goal as a comedian is to get on stage, do my job, make you laugh, go home. That's okay. What I want. My intention is never to offend anyone, but if I do, that's not my problem.
Well,
and I know it's tricky because there's a fine line, but
when you say offend somebody,
yeah.
What do you mean offend?
Either hurt their feelings or I hit something too close to home and they come up to me and you know what? I really didn't like that joke. That joke really bothered me. That was never my intention. But then again, you're coming to a comedy show and you should probably know what you're getting.
What do you think, Richard?
Well, I agree with that last statement. If you're going to see a comedy show, there are certain comedians we already know, like Eddie Murphy, for example.
Right. Okay.
We know the type of material that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. If you look at the history of Richard Pryor, for example, mm-hmm. when Richard Pryor started out in the business, he was a very clean comic.
Yes.
And it wasn't until many years later that he made the shift in terms of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree with Annie on that statement, that there are audiences that go to see a comedian. Mm-hmm. They are expecting to see that kind of a show.
Right. They know
what
they're
getting. But I also have to say there's a flip side to this mm-hmm. story. I don't know when, where, and how it happened. I'm 54 years old, mm-hmm. and somewhere it happened in our culture within the last 25 to 30 years in which basically what's happening in all forms of media is nothing more than glorified bullying. Real Housewives franchise, for example, all of those shows are about women acting in the most vile ways towards one another.
I totally agree with you.
In immature ways towards one another. And it's all about putting one down. Mm-hmm. We also know, I grew up at a time where situation comedy was exactly what it was, situations. The humor came out of the situations that the characters found themselves in.
Right.
Now, almost every comedy show on television is about putting each other down. Mm-hmm. Each character, it's one-upmanship. Mm-hmm. In terms of the character putting you down. And all these shows that are contest shows like American Idol, and So You Think You Can Dance, it's about judges. Sometimes it doesn't happen on
The Voice,
on some of the shows, but on a lot of the shows, and it started with Simon Cowell saying the cruelest things to people. Now, I do realize that these artists put themselves out there, but that still doesn't, you can be constructive without being mean.
Absolutely.
But that's what got people to watch, though, in the beginning, right? That's what got people to tune in. During the auditions, like the people that thought they could sing.
But that's exactly what I'm saying,
Annie. And that would break my heart to watch them come in and, you know, the judges were so nasty.
I wish that more people were aware of that, is that's a show too. And I know for a fact people who have gone when the auditions for American Idol were within our local area, and they went simply to bomb because they knew that that would get them on television.
Right, but you know, what I think about is, where are the role models for today's kids? I mean, when kids see adults behaving in the most vile ways, I mean, right now, I mean, and it's happening with our presidential candidates, you know, who are taking swipes at one another.
It's always been mudslinging
and saying,
with that.
Not to the extent that it's become. Yeah. I mean, trust me, I'm a lot older than you are. It wasn't always that way.
You're like a fine wine.
There was the mudslinging, but it's gotten to the point of just being able to put people down. And even watching the news, you've got pundits on all of these news programs that are saying horrible things about another person. And you know, one thing that you said also is that if you've offended someone, well, that's the way it is. I may be paraphrasing you a bit, but with me, I feel the complete opposite.
Right.
I feel that if I've offended one person, that's one person too many. And I know that you can't go through life walking around on eggshells thinking that, oh my God, something that I'm going to say or do is going to offend someone. Mm-hmm. Now, for years, as you know, I performed as Carol Channing. Mm-hmm. And just the very idea that I was performing as Carol Channing, and I'm sure that some of your listeners out there have already formed an opinion of what my act was all about. But it was a very respectful homage to what she did. I never made fun of her. No. I never made fun of the audience. Mm-hmm. I never made fun of any of these people. But because I was performing as Carol Channing, I walked a very fine line. Mm-hmm. There were many venues, and trust me when I tell you this, I have the awards and the accolades and the reviews to back up what I'm saying here.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people did not want to book my show because they were afraid they were going to get a drag show. Mm-hmm. And then the gay venues did not want to book my show because it was not your typical drag show. So I was constantly I spent 25 years explaining to the world what it was that I did or did not do. And I think that a lot of people do form opinions based on something that they've never seen before. But by the same token, if I go to see a show, and all of a sudden things start popping up that come out of left field. I didn't have a chance. That's not what I paid to go see. If I go to see a comedy, I don't want to see 12 trailers leading up to that comedy that show gratuitous violence.
I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely, you know, we talk often off air, and you had said to me that you gave me a challenge, and you said start a channel 2 and go all the way up through the channels, through my cable channels, and just note how many violent images were coming into my home. Well, I put on channel 2, and it was the news, and the next channel was a cop drama, and there was a dead body with blood, and just, it was mangled. And I said, okay, well, there's one. And I continued to go up through the channels, and now, I mean, it's not exact because some of the channels jump numbers, mm-hmm. but what I can tell you is in that short amount of time, there was over 100 violent images mm-hmm. that came into my home. And I'll tell you the truth, Richard, had you not made me note of that, I myself, and I'm pretty astute to these things, I was anesthetized to them. I never.
Well, I think a lot of people, we see these images to the point where people don't even register with them anymore.
Right.
When there's a horrific event happening, the first thing that people want to do is grab their cell phones to get those images on YouTube.
That drives me crazy.
Rather than rushing to take care of those people.
I was just going to say, why don't they put their phones down and jump in? Why don't they help these people that are being attacked?
And I want to add something to this. You and I very vividly, and I'm sure you too, Annie, remember the events right after 9/11.
Yes.
Yes.
And I remember I had a show scheduled. 9/11 was a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And that Saturday night I had a show, which I ended up canceling because I just didn't have it in me to go out there and even try to make people laugh because we were all aching with what was going on.
Right.
Yeah. And it wasn't until David Letterman came along and said, we need to laugh again. Mm-hmm. And David Letterman and Saturday Night Live were the two shows that really got people out there laughing again. Mm-hmm. But I remember the studios at that time, the heads of the studios, saying, we're going to give a little bit more family fare and a less violence. Mm. And I think the violence has gotten even worse since 9/11. And again, I know that there's an audience out there for it. Mm-hmm. But we have to realize, I know that a lot of people don't want to go that route, but I do think that there's a direct correlation with what's going on in the world, with what is
totally
being put
agree.
Out there.
There is.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we have a caller. And who's on the line right now?
We have Pamela DeButts on the line.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, can I? Hey, everybody, how are you?
Hello, Pam.
Hey.
Go ahead. Did you have a question or a comment?
So we're...
Oh, no, I was just calling in. Annie had told me to call in. She wanted me to, you know, chit-chat with you guys for a hot second.
Yeah, yeah, we're just chit-chatting. We're talking about violence on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on it?
Actually, I saw the funniest, well, it's not funny, just funny, like, just kind of, I was in disbelief. There were these images, I don't know what country they were taken, but they were of Heidi Klum. I don't know if you guys saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, two people were drowning. I believe one was her nanny and her son or something like that.
Right.
So two people were drowning, and then she had gone in the water and saved them. And in the process, her bathing suit moved, and her nipple popped out. And do you know what the media publicized? Was her nipple popping out. That's all they cared about. And they didn't, and not the people drowning. So it's like, instead of going to help somebody who's obviously in need, they got out their camera to try and, you know, photograph
it. Well, you know, you bring
it,
up a very interesting point, because that will get more mileage than if we see someone's head being blown off on television.
Right. Well, not for anything, Richard, but think back to the 1960s, and it's immortalized in Elton John's song. Who... when Marilyn Monroe died, what was it that they all reported in the news? She was found nude.
Right.
You know, and that was the sensation, not that the woman had killed herself.
Right.
No, none of the violence. And I just thought it was so funny that the media didn't even report on, like, how the people were doing. I mean, they almost drowned, and they don't want to publicize her as the hero. Nobody cares. People were drowning. That part's, like, it just... didn't even affect anybody. It was a nipple that affected everybody. I just thought it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and it just made me very sad with how, you know, jaded and how jaded people have become.
Well, thank you so much for calling in today, Pam. It was really nice of you to take time, and that was a really great point that you made, and we're going to continue on.
Yep.
Very good. Thanks
thank
again.
Thank you.
All right.
And let's move on. We were talking, and you know, it's funny. I was actually speaking to somebody in my theater group, my local theater group here in New Jersey. And she was saying that there was a production of Hurley Burley that she was helping out on.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I really hate working on this show because every other word in it is, it's David mm-hmm. Mamet. So what's mm-hmm. every other word in it?
We know.
And I said, you know, I have to agree with you. I said, I don't care. I said, the story is lost.
Right.
Because nobody hears anything after all of those swear words just coming at you.
That happened recently with me. I went to see It's Only a Play, and mm-hmm. this was a show that I was dying to see. It had a great cast, Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick.
Right.
Stockard Channing is in the show.
They're great.
And they're all phenomenal entertainers, F. Murray Abraham.
Mm.
And but every other word in the show was the F word and the C word.
Right.
Really?
And I was with a couple of friends, an older couple,
mm-hmm.
and we all looked at each other during intermission, and this was a gift that they gave me for my birthday, and they're going, this is the worst thing we've ever seen. We want to leave. And I'm saying, they said, do you want to leave? And I said, well, you bought the tickets.
Right.
And they said, well, it's your birthday. And I said, but you bought the tickets. And they said, but it's your birthday. Right. And this exchange went back and forth. And I said, let's go. And then when I saw that Terrence McNally had written the script, I'm a huge fan of Terrence McNally. Mm-hmm. Huge fan. And I was really shocked. I think that this was one of his earlier plays, but it just lost it for me because,
right. mm-hmm.
To me, it was all about, let's see how much we can shock the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I, a couple of weeks ago, we went to see The Spoils, Jesse Eisenberg's
yes.
show.
Yes, oh, that's right.
Yes. And, yeah.
And it's interesting because one of the reviews that I read said that the audience will feel like they need a shower after this is over.
But I didn't quite understand why it was saying that. I wasn't quite understanding where that reference was coming from. And I'm not going to spoil it for the...
You're not
going to
spoil the spoils.
I'm not going to spoil the spoils. I personally, and I will stand on my First Amendment rights here, I personally did not care for the show. I felt that the story lacked, and it's not that it had, you know, foul language in it. No, it wasn't.
Which
it
did.
It did, but it wasn't.
That wasn't the case.
It wasn't
though.
Like David Mamet, where it was obtrusive and it just. It
I know, but you have to also realize, Lisa, that there were some descriptions of some very vile situations
in
the
show. No, I'm getting there.
Right.
I mean, it's not like we were hearing the F-bomb all over the place, but the description in this and this story itself, the specific underlying story that was going through, it was uncalled for. I just remember sitting there, and again, that was a gift too. Richard brought me as it was a lovely gift, and it was a lovely evening. But I remember sitting there thinking to myself, why?
Right.
Why do we have to go there?
Why is that necessary?
Why is it necessary?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, and I feel the same way about comedy. Like I said earlier, I work as a clean comic, but I appreciate everybody's comedy. And I truly believe that there are topics that don't necessarily need to be touched on and that aren't appropriate, you know? And if you do choose to speak about that, make it creative. Make it funny.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I'm working on a project now about Sophie Tucker. Mm-hmm. And Sophie Tucker was a very bawdy woman of her time, but she was never vulgar. And there's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the comedians that come out of that, and there were a lot of, I mean, I remember in the 60s, all the dirty comics, Red Fox and LaWanda Page. Mm-hmm. And
that was at the height of it.
And they all had these dirty albums.
Yeah.
And you heard these. And I will admit, some of them made me laugh out loud. But the question that I want to ask you is, do you think it takes away from the comedian or anything? Do you think that some comedians cannot be funny if they don't resort to that?
I think when I first here's my thing. When I first started, because I can only speak for myself, when I first started comedy, I was filthy dirty. My first 2 years.
And why?
Because it was easy to write. Because writing dirty is easy, and that's what we see. That's what we're surrounded by. And I slowly learned, oh, these are funny jokes. but they don't really have much of a shelf life. And I'm not going to get a lot of work if I only work dirty. So therefore, I'm going to start to work clean. And I'm so glad that I realized that early on, because it really worked my creative muscle.
Well, I went to see Bette Midler last week. And
oh, I did too.
Oh, you saw her?
Yeah, she was fantastic.
And
she worked so dirty.
but I didn't think she was dirty. I mean, there was a lot of innuendo.
Yes.
But it wasn't hit you over the head with it.
Right.
And she knows how to use it.
Yes.
I mean, she has a dental
science.
She's
so great. She was okay. That was my first concert.
We have another caller right here. And go ahead, caller.
Hello, I'm really enjoying your show.
Thank you.
The panel is extremely professional.
Thank you.
I've just lost sight of what the question was.
We're talking about ethics in the media, and just basically, when is it going too far, and how do you feel about that, or do you have any input?
Well, are we talking about media or entertainment? Because
all of the above.
Media is the Latin word for the middle. So as far as the news goes, and most of what we see, for all intents and purposes, there is no middle, because the nature of television, the news, the advertising, the airwaves. Now, and I'm very thankful you guys are here. And thrilled that the internet has opened up a new frontier, mm-hmm. so that the powers that be don't have the gross, gross imbalance of power that they have, because mm-hmm. The same power brokers basically pay through the nose to get access to mass media, and then it ends up being for the sole purpose of forming opinions. And more dangerously, malforming opinions, where eventually, and I believe it's evident in our culture, that by repeating over and over and over the big lie, the power of that, and sitting back passively at being couch potatoes, we're sitting there where we're just, there's no counterpoint, there's no opposing views, we just sit and we're being programmed.
So, what you're saying is,
I wish there were a media. I wish there were a media in the middle.
Well, let me ask you this: when you say that you feel that,
are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. When you say that opinions are being formed for us, do you feel that this constant inundation of these different images, whatever they are, violent images, overtly sexual images, that they are that's becoming normal and okay to us because we're seeing them so often?
Well, I believe that the market eventually bears out what we watch. You know, that they can push whatever they want, and that doesn't mean that we'll accept it. Unfortunately, what the culture has become enamored with the prurient and the, you know, we have ourselves to blame. Because there is a hunger and an appetite for that kind of stuff. My only problem is I believe in changing the channel, you know, being a self-censor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't believe in any censorship whatsoever, that the remote is our censor. Mm-hmm. But the way advertising is, I call it a sucker punch, where mm-hmm. so you'll be watching a family program, and the commercial comes on, and it's short of soft porn.
Oh, I saw something this afternoon. Excuse me for interrupting, Michael. I was watching The View this morning.
Okay.
And a commercial came on for this new show called Mistresses.
Right.
And there was a three-way scene being depicted in this commercial.
On daytime TV.
Daytime television. And I'm sitting there going, I can't believe it was two women making love with each other and a man with them. And it's on this show, Mistresses. And this was being shown during morning television.
See, Richard, I think what you've just said is the strongest argument against societal evolution that I've ever heard. Because we've essentially, 2,000 or 3,000 years have gone by, and we've come back full circle to bread and circus. Mm-hmm. And the people like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you a question. What does offend you, if anything?
Offense?
What offends you?
Not much, I have to say, mm-hmm. because I think that we have become hypersensitive to the point of, to me, as you know, as Americans, I believe that we should work things out between ourselves. But for somebody to say something off the cuff and have it destroy their entire career mm-hmm. because some special interest group is offended, Donald Trump is going through it right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I heard his speech. I heard every word of it. The man employs probably 100,000 Mexicans, Indians, the most diverse workforce you can imagine. He was talking about the Mexican government, which is a drug cartel, essentially. It is most corrupt. Anyway, he's paying now because of the power brokers who own and operate the people's airwaves. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. You know, so I'm offended when I'm more offended by people losing their rights to free speech than by anything that anyone says. Because I can, you know, you consider the source, and most of what offends us is stuff that hurts us because it's true, I would say. And if it's not true, and if it's bigoted or anything else, we know it doesn't have anything to do with us, and we've got to have a thicker skin and a stronger backbone because it's getting a little divisive.
Well, today in the news again, you know, Paula Deen, unfortunately, is in the news again.
I heard that.
For a photograph that was done 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and her social media guru put that out to the media. And you know, and brought up this whole brouhaha again, mm-hmm. but
she's nuts to have not controlled that image.
But what I don't understand is why the guy was even in brownface when Desi Arnaz was never that dark.
No, he's a Cuban. He was a Cuban American. He was Cuban, and notoriously, if you've ever met any Cubans, they're very light skinned mm-hmm. mm-hmm. people. Just my own opinion. I think the Cuban people are most beautiful, but
Richard, I know you're a fan. I just watched the other day. I was looking up on YouTube something for the 4th of July and came across George M. Cohan, and there was Mickey Rooney, and there was Judy Garland. Judy Garland in Babes on Broadway. They're doing a full-fledged minstrel show
in blackface,
and Judy singing "Come Down to the Levee." I said to the levee, and. You know, are we going to get to the point where we're so hypersensitive?
Well, you know, I will say this.
And censorship is so dangerous because where does the axe fall?
I agree.
For instance, eBay and Walmart are still selling Nazi paraphernalia, but they won't sell the Confederate flag. This is dangerous.
Well, the thing is, I mean, right now, where I do feel that we've gone so far over that ledge is the fact that the Dukes of Hazzard mm-hmm. has been pulled from networks. And I am also, you know, I am absolutely against all these allegations against Bill Cosby, mm-hmm. for example. And I understand there's a knee-jerk reaction, you know, to pull his shows off the air.
Right.
But it's also affected the livelihoods of
the
all of those
act,
other
right.
actors that were on that show.
Yes.
Well, in a trial in the media, rather than a trial where it belongs in a court of law,
right.
You're never going to get the true story.
And
lives are destroyed. You know, once they get it through the courts, what are they going to say? Oh, I'm sorry. We tried on in the media and the court of public opinion and let the mob lynch you. And at the end of the day, you weren't guilty. So we're sorry.
Yeah. Well, and but if you notice that a trial through the media lasts longer,
and
there's no going back from that. You will always have that implication upon you, whether you're found innocent or guilty. You always have that stain.
Right.
The difference between the media and the court, though, is the court has a meticulous record.
The court does, but unfortunately, because the media is a visual product, we remember what we see a whole
Correct.
Lot longer than what we hear,
right.
mm-hmm.
which is really why I wanted to do this show from the beginning, from last year when the inception of it came, mm-hmm. and it was to talk about new art, people who are doing something new, people who are not discovered yet, people who
well,
are...
like you folks, and I tell you, I've been listening all from the beginning of the program, and you're fantastic.
Thank you for saying that. Are you a critic?
I'm going to run, but thank you for taking my questions and my comments. This is free speech in motion. I love it. And just let me say that the First Amendment you were talking about was not written to protect polite speech. It was written for the exact opposite, to protect offensive speech. And we've got to work it out between ourselves, or we're going to become a dystopian society where nobody trusts each other, and we're all enemies, and we're all balkanized. I hope to God that doesn't happen. Have a good night, y'all.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I agree with what he has just said, mm-hmm. but by the same token, there are certain people who stoke the flames, mm-hmm. and they continue stoking the flames over and over and over again. And a perfect example is with this horrendous thing that happened in France this past year, mm-hmm. with the images of Muhammad and people losing their lives over the fact that they drew these images.
Right.
But because of something happening like that, you know, artist in Texas saying, we're going to show that we're above all this. And then they put their own lives in danger. Mm-hmm. They're not just putting their lives in danger. They're putting the lives of so many other people in danger. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not advocating censorship. You have to be very careful to do so. But you also have to have a sense of responsibility as to what you put out into the world.
Absolutely.
Well, see, you said exactly what I was thinking just now, and I really, because as you were speaking, there's an expression that I always like to use, and I call it a backdoor rebel. And the backdoor rebel is the person who incites the riot, and then they turn around and run out the back door and take no responsibility for all of the aftermath that has occurred because of it. So, okay, if you have an opinion, so be it. You have an opinion. And make sure that you have something behind that opinion. You're not just spouting your mouth off.
But, you know, if you're with someone and they're saying what you consider to be offensive things, and what you consider to be offensive may not be things that I consider offensive and vice versa.
Right. Okay.
But if you feel that someone has said something that is offensive, are you obligated to still associate with that person?
I think that's your choice. You know, let's say I'm at a dinner party and somebody says something offensive about the Jewish religion or something like that, or something that hits close to home, I can either take offense to it or I can laugh it off. I think it's your personal choice. And if I really was offended, I would speak up and say, hey, you know what? That just wasn't appropriate.
Okay, let me go a step further. Donald Trump saying something on a public level.
Form.
And this is a man who is running for president of the United States. And obviously he is saying what he firmly believes.
Right.
And he has not backed down, not with anybody.
And he shouldn't.
And
whether we think he's right or wrong, he shouldn't
apologize.
Well,
if that's what he believes, that's what he believes. And I would rather know that this is what he believes rather than him to hide it.
Right.
You know?
Well, in that case, I happen to agree with you because the fact that he hasn't backed down and given some platitude and, oh, I'm so sorry for what I said. And you know for a fact that he doesn't.
But where I was going with this, and just to finish this, yes, but does that mean that all the people like Macy's and the other channels, do they have the right to drop him if they are offended by what he has to say?
I think they're so afraid not to, because that's their money coming in, right? So that's why the Cosby Show was dropped. That's why they're dropping Donald Trump, because they're so afraid not to. And Dukes of Hazzard. They're afraid not to because that's their clientele, and they're so afraid to offend people.
Well, last week on the 4th of July in Alabama, they asked all of the senators of the state and all of the congressmen and all of the political leaders what their stance was on the Confederate flag.
Okay.
And 160 people refuse to answer that question.
Wow.
With either I'm for it or I'm against it. And the person who asked all these people ran a full page ad on the front page of the Alabama newspaper saying these people don't have an opinion. And they outed all of these people.
Right.
And that, to me, is more offensive than saying you're for it or against it. take a stand with what you believe in.
I totally agree.
However, just to try and play a little bit of a devil's advocate here, I think that people are so afraid to say anything.
Well, of course they are.
So, and I know for myself, I'm going to be very honest here. There are a lot of times that I'll see something on Facebook or I'll see something out in our social media and I'll refuse to comment on it because I have an opinion. I know what my opinion is and I'm not going to put it out there because it's my opinion and I choose not to express it. I think that the better answer regarding the Confederate flag, if they chose not to answer, is I don't wish to express myself right
now. I disagree
now.
If they're in a political position. I think I want to know where my politicians stand on every issue.
Yeah.
I agree, you know, for the layman to do that. But if you are in or if you are holding an office where people have voted you in, I want to know where you stand. I want to know where you stand on gay marriage. I want to know. And you don't have to agree with it. And that's another thing. You and I talked about this off the air. I am finding more anger coming out of the gay community for people who disagree with this law going through than, you know, the other side around. I really mean this. You can't expect people to change their belief system if they've been taught this for centuries. And they have been taught this for centuries. It's generational. And it's gone down from generation to generation to generation. And, I mean, I grew up in South Carolina. I mean, I'm openly gay, and anyone who knows me knows that. But I didn't know another gay person in South Carolina. I'm sure they were there.
But
in the 1970s, I didn't know that these people existed. And it wasn't until after I came to New York that I even came to realize who and what I was all about. And it's very difficult, I understand, for, and this is a whole new show that we'll talk about, but for young people to come out when they don't have those role models. And that goes back to something that I said earlier. Where are the role models? Where are the people that these kids can look up to? And, but...
You know where they are? We're too busy beating them down. There could be so many people out there that we could all look up to for various reasons. I personally am a huge fan of Oprah Winfrey. I always have been. I always will be. And I've heard so many people say horrible things about her.
And her private life.
And her private life. And... That and I, my answer is always very simple. That falls under the category of, gee, I really don't care. Because what that woman has given
it's
to me...
Well, it's not any of our business.
Right.
Right. Because what she has given me, her life experience, she is an icon to me. She is a role model to me. There are so many others, I'm just not thinking of them right at this moment. And now, and if for me to say it, and this is my show, so I will say it, another role model for me is Joel Osteen. I happen to think he is a wonderful role model and a wonderful person to listen to and very uplifting. And there are people who say horrible things about him as well.
And most of those people don't even know about him.
Right.
They just know of him. They think they know something.
Actually, that's very funny you brought that up because a couple of months ago we were speaking. We were just chit-chatting and you were like, you know what, Annie? Why don't you just like YouTube Joel Osteen? And I had this thing in my mind like, oh, holy roller, like super conservative. But really, his messages are beautiful of hope and love and acceptance.
Yes.
So I'm glad that you had me listen to Joel Osteen because I am a fan as well.
So let's wrap this thought process up. So where do you see the role of ethics in the media going forward? Do we have a responsibility?
I believe that every person has a responsibility for what they put out into the world.
Agreed.
And if you stand strongly behind something, by all means, I think you should be out there and you should be on your soapbox and you should be, you know, screaming to the masses. I don't like the Westboro Church. Those people are filled with so much hate and anger. The white supremacy groups that are popping up everywhere. The KKK is on the rise again in South Carolina. I am a South Carolinian. I grew up in South Carolina. I was born in 1961, the same year that the Confederate flag was put up. The Confederate flag was put up, I'm going to get on this soapbox for just a quick second, was put up basically to say we are against segregation of any kind. So that symbol has hurt so many people for 54 years.
Right.
And it's time that it comes down. And I realize that there's a whole generation of people out there who say that is a symbol which represents Southern pride. But you have to look at the hate that is behind that flag.
The history behind that is so
awful. And the history that's behind that. And, you know, so I'm not a fan of that kind of rhetoric. I don't go to violent movies. Mm-hmm. I don't watch violent TV shows. I don't listen to violent rap songs. Mm-hmm. That's not a part of who I want.
Right.
If there are artists out there that are bringing something positive to the world, no matter how that is being presented, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. But if you're bringing negativity into the world, I'm sorry, I'm not a fan.
Right. Okay. Annie?
No, I totally agree. And
as a comedian, what do you feel is the responsibility of the comedian to, what's the line? Where's the line? Is there a line not to cross?
I have my own personal lines not to cross. I don't talk about molestation. I don't talk about rape. I don't necessarily, I don't talk about those things. Whether it comes to race and religion and my own personal beliefs and my family and my friends, I'll talk about that on stage. Mm-hmm. But my intention is to never offend anyone. But if I do, that's not my problem. And I'm sorry. You know, in my personal life or with my friends and my family, I would never want to offend anybody. But when you're coming to a comedy show, you know what you're getting. It's my job, and that's what I do.
Now, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I said that before. Yeah. I totally agree with that. If you go into that kind of environment, you know exactly what you're going into.
But there's a time and a place for everything. And I'm not for that outlet. When I'm at a dinner party or I'm with my mom, I would never mm-hmm. speak that way around mm-hmm. my mother, mm-hmm. nor do I curse on stage either.
Okay.
But I believe in freedom of speech. And also in regards to the Confederate flag, I'm glad it's down.
Did it come down?
Well, I hope so.
I think it's come down tomorrow.
I think it's coming down. I'm glad that it's coming down. I think that it's a symbol of hate, and all I see is just racism behind it, and I think it's an awful symbol.
Well, I think
it's just as bad as the Nazi swastika.
Yes, both of you grew up in the North.
Right.
I grew up in the South, and I remember everything was segregated until I was in the fourth grade.
Wow.
And when I was in the fourth grade, we had our first African-American teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in two people, David Bratcher and Yolanda Galloway. Yolanda Galloway is still a friend of mine on Facebook.
Yeah.
They were brought in as an experiment to see how that they would integrate with the rest of the students in the school. And there was no issue for that. You know, Rodgers and Hammerstein said it best. You have to be carefully taught.
You have to be carefully taught, I think. And with that being said, thank you, because that was a wonderful segue for what I wanted to represent in this show. And that is that we as artists have the responsibility to be the mirror to society, to bring up points. And sometimes, just as looking in the mirror, sometimes you have to look into the mirror to say, ooh, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have to look into the mirror to reflect back what is good. And I feel that as artists, that's where we need to go. That's where we need to make sure that that's our intentions when we are creating our art, whether it is in music, in comedy, or on stage, mm-hmm. or in the visual arts. So, what a wonderful show. What a wonderful opportunity to hear what each of you, you're two of my favorite people in the world anyway.
We love you.
She pays us. Very well.
But we will have a guest again next month when we come back on August the 12th with David Melamens. In the meantime, my name is Lisa Dascoli. Thank you, Annie Weiss. Thank you, Richard Skipper.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Town. If you have any comments, reach us on Facebook, Talk of the Town, or on broadbandboxoffice.com.
Hello, this is Dr. Barry Prostowski. I invite you to watch Courageous Doctors, an exciting new show on Broadband Box Office about how healthcare is affecting you today.
Hi, I'm Randy Lupo, host of The Randy Lupo Show on Broadband Box Office. Wait, is that a tongue twister or an alliteration? Come meet my favorite people, comedians, actors, writers, spiritual people, and everyone in between. I'm looking forward to seeing you.